Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties that, let's face it, mean more than ever. And pre-owned inventory that is outstanding, and they go through it with a fine-tooth comb. It really eases the buying experience. Service department, top-notch, great technicians, take care of the life of the vehicle. It's one-stop vehicle shopping. It is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. All right. By the way, Cale Makar, suspended for Game 5, saw the hit last night as they were playing out against Seattle's top scorer, Jared McCann, and he is out of Game 5. And Makar, of course, one of the top players in the game. All right, so let's get rolling here. There's a new survey out, which I'll get to in a moment, but first, time now for a trip to the Bitterness Cafe, where the gruel is always warm.
Well, I got a nice bowl for Adam Silver with the way he's handled his league the last couple of days, as he struck again last night with only a one-game suspension for Deontay Murray for hitting the official, or bumping into the official, after Game 4 the other night. Once again, what are we doing? You've got everything that else that's happened that we've talked about yesterday, on and off the court antics. Then you have a guy bump into an official, and he only gets a one-game suspension. Adam Silver, where's your hammer? Lay the hammer down. This can't be tolerated in the NBA, especially in the playoffs. He made, I don't care if it was a slight bump, I don't care what it was, the intent was there. He made contact with the official. It should be more than a one-game suspension. It should be for at least the rest of this series. Except for Draymond Green, Adam Silver is beginning to be an enabler for a group of players in a league that already feel entitled to whatever they want.
All right. According to the latest Wall Street Journal poll, the percentage of Americans who describe themselves as being very happy is 12%. I work with somebody who's among the 88.
Oh, my almighty!
I heard this morning. I heard this morning, so I have to use this.
And there it is.
It was too rich not to use. All right. You know, I did go back, Matt, to look at the tape of the incident with the official. And I know, but I didn't quite see what he did. I still, even watching the video, I wasn't quite sure what he did. Did he bump him on the way out? It wasn't during the game.
Yeah, as he's walking off the floor after the game was over against the Celtics, he sees where the official is. He kind of walks in his direction, then kind of gives him like a shoulder to his shoulder, so to speak, as if he's like he's in the way. But he created it for the ref to be in the way, so we bumped him with his shoulder. And you can tell he's obviously upset with the outcome and the officiating and all those sorts of things. It was one of those things where he went out of his way to put the official in his way so he can, oh, I'm sorry, I bumped you. Like, stop.
I would only go a game on that because it wasn't during the game. I there's a fine line here, right? So follow me on this, okay? And here's the fine line. It's not a regular season game, right? It is a playoff game. And so, do you want to... Now, I realize that the player is determining... And so you're suspending him to make your point, but you're also trying to do it in such a way where, like, you're not determining the overall outcome. Do you follow where I'm going here with that?
Yeah. And you're right. It's not like it was during the game. It was post game, so I think that's a fair point. But as far trying to determine the series and stuff, I think he did it. You know, then he did it to himself. He was selfish. He did it to his team.
All right. Sure. Yeah. No. And I realize that when you do something, right. And we always talk about how you're not determining, you know, the person then making the decisions, trying not to determine the outcome. When in reality, like, for example, Draymond Green was suspended. Well, he actually determined his own outcome. Right?
Oh, hands down. Yeah. I see your point. Right. That was more blatant than this. No, yeah, right. You're absolutely right.
You determine your own outcome at that point.
Yeah.
This is also post-game. You're not supposed to do it. But he didn't let him off by just fining him and saying you can't do it. He did suspend him. The hit McCarr had last night, the second it happened, you knew it was a suspendable offense. And I was watching. It was right before there was a shutdown by me. Okay, we're done. It's a little late. The game's in Seattle. Oh, man. The playoffs are very delicate because you're trying with your discipline to mete out discipline without attempting to determine the outcome. You know, Atlanta's going to have to go out. They're going to have to play tonight without them. And let's face it, they lose, it's done. It's pretty simple. All right, so there you are.
You know, I just saw the McCarr hit. He also should be suspended at least the rest of the series. Because that play, the play was over. The play was dead. And then it was a couple seconds later where he shoves him into the boards like that and he's down. I mean, you can't have that.
I think what he's saying is that he didn't know the play was over. I think the puck went into the netting.
It did, yeah. It deflected after the goalie made the save.
Right. And so what he's saying is he didn't know. For example, I'll give you an example. Joey Porter Jr., in fact, I was on a show in Detroit today. And because they wanted to ask about Joey Porter Jr., the Lions have the 6th and the 18th pick, so this is the Lions flagship. So he wanted to know more about Joey Porter Jr. Now, I didn't bring this play up, but remember the opening play of the game where they where McCarthy dumped the ball off to Blake Corum, and Joey went up, got him, and it's boom, 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 and finally threw him down, and he got a 15-yard penalty on the play. So, I don't know, the Sunday after, I think it was the next day, maybe it was Tuesday after that, I asked him, I said, hey, can I ask you, I said, what happened on that play? He said, well, he says, look, I was trying to make a statement. He says, but honest to God, I never heard the whistle. And he, you know, and look, at this point, you know, and Joey's the kind of guy where if you were to ask him, hey, look, I messed up. Right? And it was a pretty honest answer. Look, I was trying to make a statement. He says, but then I didn't hear the whistle. I can believe that. People are yelling and screaming. You know, 111,000 people there. Sometimes you get into that zone and you know. And you don't know. I mean, McCarr was just flat out late. And as soon as you saw it was a suspendable offense. The fact is, I don't know if McCann's going to be able to play in the series. I think he might be done for the series.
Yeah, I'm with you there. That looked ugly.
I mean, it looked ugly to a point. It just looked like a late hit. And then when it was slow in getting up, I was like, okay. But yeah, that was. We've had so many guys get hurt in the playoffs, both in hockey and in the NBA. But yeah, that's Neil Coulong, by the way, coming up today. Did you see the Pirates story?
They somehow got it done.
They signed Ryan Reynolds to the first ever $100 million contract with the Pittsburgh Pirates. That leaves only three teams now in the history of baseball that have never had a contract of $100 million or more, and that would be the Kansas City Royals, the Oakland A's, and then this one surprised me a bit, the Chicago White Sox. And the reason I'm surprised, I just thought that Abreu had, you know, when he was still with them, Abreu was with the Astros now. Yeah, I sort of assumed he was.
Yeah, me too.
But no. But here's the deal. They sign him to an 8-year, $106.75 million extension. Largest deal in franchise history. And look, they're off to a 16-7 start. They have the best record in the National League. And they're behind only Tampa Bay for the best record in baseball. Over the winter, Reynolds had requested a trade. But he's off to a great start. 5 home runs. He's knocked in 18. He's hitting .294. And the Pirates are playing great baseball. The contract is very similar to the one that Byron Buxton signed with the Twins and the one that Kyle Seager signed with the Mariners. He gets a $2 million signing bonus on top of $6.75 million that he's scheduled to make this year. They will then pay him $10 million next year, $12 million in 25, $14 million in 2026, then $15 million each year in 27, 28, 29, and 30. There is a $20 million team option in 20 with a $2 million buyout in 31. And they also have Cabrian Hayes under contract at $70 million total. They are looking now to extend O'Neill Cruz, who's out for a couple months here, and Mitch Keller, their fine right-handed pitcher. When you're sitting there and you are, and this is only me, I may be making a leap here, but on guesswork, and it's just pure guesswork. I wonder, when you're sitting there and the story comes out about your regional sports network and whether you're still going to have the contract or not, and it's revealed that you're making $61 million a year off that contract, it's hard to look at your fan base, don't you think? and say, "Hey, yeah, we're crying poor here." No.
Very, very interesting.
Well, I'm just saying, you know where I'm going here.
Oh, it makes too much sense.
That your fan base is looking at you saying, hey, wait a minute, you're getting $61 million a year, or have been getting $61 million a year, and you've been keeping it? Well, you know, this shows that maybe they're not going to keep it. And this is a guy that, you know, the running joke we've had on this show has been what? Ryan Reynolds won't be a Pirate by August 1st. Ryan Reynolds won't be a Pirate. You know, and they've kept him and kept him and kept him. Then he demands a trade, and you're like, yep, okay. And doggone it, they kept him. He's 28 years old, so it's an 8-year deal. I mean, you and I, you know, I think anybody with common sense knows he's not going to get to the full 8 years. But let's give the Pirates credit where credit's due. They're playing terrific on the field, and this is a big move for them to keep a guy that's been playing like a winning player. Not bad.
And I got to believe that the guys you just mentioned, that they are definitely going to try to extend all those guys. They're committed to trying to at least extend all those guys, because that was the big sticking point with why Brian Reynolds wanted his own option in the contract, and now there's none, and there's a limited no-trade clause in this, too. So
yes,
obviously
yes.
He must feel comfortable with where things are going with the organization if all of a sudden he dropped that, because that was the big sticking point in all these negotiations. He wanted an opt-out, and now he doesn't have it, and now he's a limited no-trade clause. So I guess he's happy.
Well, let me put it this way. At the end of each month, he's happy. I know that. It's not bad. Not bad at all. All right. We'll come back. Neil Kulong, next half hour, we'll talk more about the draft. I want to get into this S2 test. I had never heard of it till this week. Had never heard of it. Interesting. And we'll talk about that with Neil in the next half hour. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Neil Kulong, next half hour. We'll talk to him about the S2 test. We have no idea what the questions are in the S2 test. I do know the suit was up all night studying. When you go to the staff meetings, do you worry?
There's a reason why we've now gone to bi-weekly staff meetings.
Wow. How about monthly?
That might be next.
Find out what the heck he knows about this thing. I have no idea. I never had heard of it till this week.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department that does a great job of taking care of the life of the vehicle. And it is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online, sunburymotors.com. It's a tradition unlike any other. Tuesdays with Neil. Hello, Neil.
Tuesdays with Neil. We gotta market that. We need some T-shirts.
Absolutely. No, T-shirts, the whole deal. It'd be great.
It'll just be the Tuesdays with Neil on the front. The back will just be whatever five-minute diatribe I just led you down that had nothing to do with the questions asked.
Back, we'll have a picture of a rabbit hole.
There it is. There's my new logo. Whatever company I create.
I had never heard of... Now, obviously, we've talked about the Wonderlic test for years, and I know they don't use it anymore. But I had never heard of the S2 test until this week. Had you?
I had. I am not familiar with the components of it or anything, but I knew they had looked to kind of modernize the Wonderlic test and make it more fluid and more decision-based. Beyond that, the specifics of how it was put together, what they're really looking for, is well beyond my pay grade. But it seems more in line with probably what they need, where the Wonderlic was kind of a problem-solving thing. This is really more decision-based, how quickly their mind is working from one thing to another. I think there's a lot of utility for that within the game of football. Now, we'll caution everybody to know that there is no golden gun with any of this. There's no one thing that does everything. All of these are tools that they use to round out their evaluation. I don't think there's anybody that says this guy scored, 98th percentile to this, but he's a terrible football player. Let's draft him because he's really smart. I don't think that they do that. But it does help give them a sense of how they're playing the way they're playing, how they're being coached. Think of it like this. If they're excellent problem solvers, if they can adapt to this and you have cognitive evidence to show that, if they play in a scheme that isn't yours, you might view that as empirical evidence that they have a higher propensity to learn this a little bit quicker. It just might give them more of a sense of who they are as a player in ways that you can't just kind of ask and figure out. So I like the sound of it from the very little that I know of it. But as usual, what it ends up turning into is a competition. Who had the top? Who had the lowest? who can we shame in social media for this? Who are we going to grossly overpraise because of it? It's not really the real function of what they're using it for. But, Brock Purdy comes in, plays, reasonably well in a couple games. He had the highest in this last year. The company's stock is going to split next month. We know that's coming.
Right. Yeah, because... What's interesting about sports jobs are very much like our jobs. For example, in our job, we can give them a resume, we can give them references, and so forth. But there's a body of work out there that either with you they can read or hear, with me they can hear, and they can make their judgment subjectively as to which direction they want to go in. Most people, they go to the office, okay, I'm going to go in and apply for a job over Purdy Insurance, and here's my resume, here are my references and so forth, but they don't have a camera on you. When it comes to football, it's like us. They've got miles and miles of video to show whether you can make decisions or not.
Yeah, I think you might make this argument as well. I think, for example, this might be a little rabbit hole-ish, but within the Twin Cities area, the local commission in charge of this was trying to find a different way to name the two airport terminals that are here. There was they used to be called Lindbergh, and I forget what the other one was, reason why they renamed it. They hired a commission to study this and come up with recommendations for the names. This commission allegedly cost somewhere in the ballpark of like $1.5 million. Their conclusion was naming them Terminal A and Terminal B.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Now,
it
obviously seems silly that that's what you're going to want to do. That's, you know, they spent all this money on it. But when you're that big, not that money available, there comes with it an expectation that you're going to spend it to ensure whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You put a lot of money behind this. You're supporting this decision. This is their reasoning. There's a lot of things that go into that. It's not as simple as, you know, get the creative team together and come up with something. It's more addressing a bunch of issues that come with that, knowing what the demographics are like, providing sound reasoning for doing what you're doing. That stuff costs money, you know, and you can't just hire two people off the street to come up with names and expect people to react positively to that. Not to suggest that spending $1.5 million on A and B is going to be met all that favorably either. But if it's, you know, coming up from Joe Sweatsock and his buddy Hal, you might have a harder time selling it. So I think to some degree there is some validity in spending with enormous financial resources that they have, spending to unturn everything that they can, to have the most data available. I think your results will vary from team to team, not only in the validity of the information, but how much they really even want to use it. You know, there might be teams that get it because they all contribute to it. The league is the one that's funding it. They all get the results, but they don't care at all. And some teams might live and die by it. It's going to totally depend. Yeah. But the idea of putting it together, I think, does make a lot of sense because, simply put, they can, so they probably should to some degree. You know, it's you have the resources to do it. You don't want to scrimp on this. This is the single most important part of your franchise. You need to select talent, and you have to hit consistently on every player that you can, and the odds of that are very, very much against you. So get as much information you can to make the best guess that you can. That's really what this is about.
Yeah, and look, and that's what it comes down to. It's what your personal taste is. There's going to be some team out there that loves Anthony Richardson, and they don't think as highly as Stroud because, again, let's get to the subjective part. It's just what your opinion and what your feeling happens to be about somebody.
Yep. If you value traits, you know who you're going to go with in that situation.
Yeah.
If you evaluate the player based on what he is playing like today instead of who he's going to be, maybe, the choice is clear. But you're exactly right. Whoever drafts those two players, the general manager is going to be very happy that they drafted them. We know that we're going to hear that after it.
All right. Exactly. That's exactly what they're going to tell everybody. Overall in this draft, everybody, of course, will concentrate on round one. I got it. But this is a seven-round draft, and a lot of really good players come out in those seven rounds that help teams. The Steelers, in the overall draft profile, in the end, when they're done with seven rounds, positionally, what do you think they have to take?
For me, and it's interesting because, you know, I've always considered Mike Tomlin to be maybe the best podium coach in the NFL as far as getting a message across that seems like it has value, and it has absolutely none. He'll refute this for reasons that make me laugh, but they have a glaring hole at left tackle, and there's no way objectively you can tell me that they don't. They're going to draft a tackle. Along with that, call this 1A and 1B. I'm not even sure what comes first. They only have one cornerback signed next year. That's Patrick Peterson, and he's going to be 35, due $8 million. Odds are not very good. They want Patrick Peterson on the team next year. They need a cornerback. So I don't see there's any way, any scenario at all that they do not address both of those positions probably pretty quickly into the draft. I would consider those to be glaring holes. Now, what Mike Tomlin's definition of a glaring hole is, you know, likely to be different than mine, but they have a long-term for both of these spots, if not a short-term need. So I would feel if the prospects available at those positions match up with where they're drafting, that's where they're going to go. Once each, maybe they pick up a corner late as well. You need a good amount of those. That's why James Pierre is still on the team. He's a great veteran, inexpensive option, but you can't count on him being on the team next year, and he's not signed. So they need to bring in somebody, and I can't help but think their offense is going to be significantly improved just with the absence of Dan Moore. Putting somebody else into that spot who's got some ability will definitely, raise it up a little bit higher than the 15 points a game they scored for half the season last year. I'm not blaming all of that on Dan Moore, but when you have a tackle that can't protect on a three-step drop and doesn't block particularly well in the ground game, I don't know what you want, but you've got to get at least an average player in there. And that, to me, is a glaring hole. But, I'm sure Coach Tomlin wants to protect his player a little bit as well. But they know they need a tackle, and they're going to find one in this draft.
Well, they're in a good spot because they have two of the top 32 picks because of that really surprising Bears trade for Chase Claypool. So they get the first pick of the second round. Which I find to be interesting. It also doesn't rule out the possibility, and you and I did talk about this 2-3 weeks ago. Now, Patrick Peterson can always play safety, too.
Yeah, there's some utility to that. I think they have their eyes on that. I think it makes sense. We have to look at a lot of sub-package defensive football.
Yes.
Having at least one sort of positionless player. When I say positionless, I don't mean that literally, but Patrick Peterson, if you want to call him a cornerback, you can. Where is he lining up? How is he filling on the field? What is he, what are his checks? What are his responsibilities? That should be more indicative of what position he's playing as opposed to what, the media guide says that he plays. He doesn't have to be an outside cornerback playing straight-up man and mirroring a guy all over the field. He can be a cornerback is one of the more misleading names in sports now for what they're doing. You have a slot cornerback, which by definition is contradictory. He's not on the corner. He's literally inside of the corner. That's his job. That is the type of role Patrick Peterson can play. Now, imagine that, but he's off the ball 12 yards. Technically, he's a safety, right? But what if he has man responsibilities? That indicates more that he is a cornerback. And really, neither of those descriptions fit anymore with a lot of what NFL teams are doing defensively in the sub-package era. So, yes, you can drop him back and alleviate the short space stuff, which I'll be honest, I have some concerns with for him. I don't think he's great at flipping his hips, running straight downfield without help, but you also have one of the best free safeties in the game playing center field over the top of that. He doesn't have to be in the guy's pocket. They got him over the top. Can he take a guy in man across the middle on a post? Maybe not, but again, he's playing in a defense that has back help. So if he's one of those people, if he's playing back or he's playing underneath, it's not really the true traditional cornerback position, but he can play how the Steelers define a safety in like a cover three look. He can do that. That's probably more befitting of his skills today. He doesn't need to be Minkah Fitzpatrick to be a safety, I guess is what I'm saying. There are middle grounds to this that can fit where his skill set is at his age.
Yeah, because I know right now for college football, I'm getting ready for the upcoming season, and I've already gone through seven teams, so I'm going up to team eight. And then on the college level, I'm seeing 3-3-5s. I'm seeing 4-2-5s. I mean, a lot of five defensive back looks based on today's game. And that's what I'm getting ready for. And that's what you're talking about, because now those five become, in some ways, with the exception of a couple of guys, like an amoeba.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, that's what it is. I would even say it's XX5, XX6. You know, the emphasis today is on your secondary. It's not on your front. You can put the Steelers have been doing this for years and still argue with people. They haven't played a true 3-4 since Casey Hampton's final season. It's not a 3-4 defense. They don't use a zero technique nose tackle. There are situations in which they will, but that's not the definitive characteristic of their defense. In fact, the only thing that's consistent is really they pretty much, short of short yardage situations, they pretty much have five or six defensive backs on the field. Another reason they need another cornerback. They'll have one next year. You have to find seven more of them if you want to be able to field something. But they need to define doing based on coverage for obvious reasons. They're throwing the ball all the time. They're using routinely at least three receivers on a field, and their running backs are small slot receivers nowadays. So you need fewer linebackers, probably fewer defensive linemen, and more coverage guys that can handle, a bunch of fireflies moving out all over the field on any particular down and distance. So it's more instructive to look at coverage as opposed to how they're aligning their front six or their front seven. There's something to be said about a team that has three down consistently, where those guys are lined up, because, over or under, that's going to dictate what your coverage is anyway, certainly how you fit the run. But overall, a lot more of it is what your cornerbacks are doing after the snap and what your middle safety is doing. I wouldn't even necessarily call it a free safety anymore. Are they coming down? Are they to the box? Are they playing that deep center field role? Are they lining up on guys and man? That's more indicative of how a defense is looking to challenge an offense, as opposed to really, the way it used to be, where your nose tackle is, where your buck linebacker is, because there isn't a fullback. And the formations are much more balanced than they were traditionally 25 years ago. So a lot more to watch within a secondary now, as opposed to, what we're used to seeing with that, kind of alpha middle linebacker dictating everything.
30 seconds or less. Should the NFL draft be declared a national holiday with time off?
I would.
You're thinking.
there's a reason. Yes, I feel that it should be. What we get into, though, is that in my world, who's going to write about it? That's sort of why it's like the more we go, the more we have to continue to go. And it kind of gets to a collapsing point. Usually I'm borderline angry come Sunday night. You're tired of all of it. But it's a great time. I love this time of year. I'm looking forward to it. This is a great week for me.
It's a great week for all of us. We enjoy it. It's amazing how just the simple process of handing a card with a name on it is really cool.
I remember it wasn't that long ago that this was, you had rounds 1 through 3 at the primetime slot or whatever it was, but that isn't even all that far removed. And they did basically the whole thing the same day. that was a real test of endurance.
Yeah.
If you were a fan, you knew who your team took in the seventh round. You didn't have to wait for the newspaper the next day. You stayed up and watched the whole thing. 14 hours of draft content. Oh, I'm a strange person.
But that's what we did. That's what we did. We watched all of it and enjoyed it. And when ESPN, I think it was Chet Simmons was the head of ESPN at the time. And he went to Pete Rozelle and said, "Would like to televise it." And I guess Rozelle looked at him and went, "You want to do what?" He said, "All we're doing is picking guys."
And you can tell right away from those early ones. They're not used to the microphones. They're awkward and weird, but it's basically like a commodities exchange, you know? They're not as, we don't get why this is interesting. Why do you guys care so much? And they've got the section in the back of the fans, usually the Jets fans. Really geeky looking guys all done up, and they're just screaming about everything, yelling because they did the work. You know, they had to go out. They couldn't even buy these magazines; they had to write them themselves. So they've been taking notes all season on all these people, and it's just fascinating how much it's grown. I get a big kick out of that.
Oh my goodness, it's unbelievable. But the NFL looked at him. What are you, nuts? What are you doing? Andy Cards? And they used to have those helmet phones.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Who didn't want
Every
one of
table
those?
Had one, and you could buy the replica on the table.
Oh, it was so awesome. What a great idea. You know what? Sell those now. It's a cell phone version of it with that as your charger. That'll sell.
Yeah.
Retro
no doubt.
Thing. I would buy that.
I invite you back, by the way, for another edition of Tuesdays with Neil next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Tuesday's the best day.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you. You guys have a good one.
Neil Coulon. That's what I should have gotten you for Christmas. The Eagles helmet phone from the draft table.
That would be a brilliant gift.
You have to look that up online, because obviously you're too young to have remember when they had this. But they were helmet phones. Now, I think the ones on the table were decorations. I don't think anybody actually made a call on them. But they had, like, it's an Eagles helmet, you know, whatever team you're having to be. It was phone.
Lisa's been wondering what to get me for my birthday. I think I'm going to add this to the list.
Well, I mean, and for the suit, a Steeler phone. He'd love that. I could see that. You know, I could see we could get him two, one for his office and then one for home. A Steeler helmet phone. I think I remember back in the day, and they'd be at the New York Marriott Marquis, and they'd have these on the table, and you'd look at it, and no offense, you'd look at it, that's pretty cool. All right, we'll come back next half hour. Get Mertzi a Bears phone. We'll get you an Eagles phone. We'll get two for the suit. And let's see. Roger will get him a Washington, right?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it'd be great. And they're not exactly under the category of inexpensive, but they're pretty. I always thought it was pretty cool. Like, hey, that looks cool. Then I look at the price. I'm going, well, it's not as cool as I thought or hoped. It's not as cool as I hoped. How about that? Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.